Welcome to Yacht Crew Vlogs, where we tell the stories of those in the yachting industry. A behind-the-scenes look that discovers the individuals in the industry, their history, their passions, and what inspires them to do what they do. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and I'm very pleased to welcome my next guest, Dr. Julian Hunter. How are you?
Hello, I'm very good, thank you.
And you're coming from where?
The north of England in Newcastle-upon-Tyne.
Yeah, right. And by what's it like right there now? Is that, you know, I mean, is it September? Is it
well,
still
it's
quite
sort of
warm?
Changing. It's sort of changing. Once you get to the end of August, the switch goes and it starts to cool down. So we got some warm days and some cool days, some nice warm seas. So we got a lot of paddle boarding going on down the bottom there. But it's a lovely place to be, whatever season it is.
Nice, nice. Well, you are the head of sustainability at ICOMIA. Now, for those out there that aren't familiar with ICOMIA, and of course the yachting industry is well known for its acronyms, what is ICOMIA?
Okay, yeah, I start as the head of sustainability for ICOMIA in October. ICOMIA stands for the International Council of Marine Industry Associations.
What does that title mean then? What is your position and what are you expected to achieve within?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, the boating industry has got to do its thing to be to contribute to a nature positive future, which is what everyone's talking about now. So it's about climate change, of course, but it's also about protecting biodiversity. You know, the nature that we've got out there is under careful balance. And really, it's a threat because of global warming, water temperatures changing, man's activities. So really, I think... Now, what I want to do personally, and I haven't agreed formally with the ICOMIA guys what my complete remit is yet, but I think I want to do my bit to help the boating industry to secure a nature-positive future for itself and for everybody else.
Well, and from my understanding, we're talking about biofouling here. And, you know, Before actually talking to you or having to do the research on you, I wasn't really sure what that meant. And upon the research, what I guess people don't understand is it's not about what sort of ends up on your boat and having to clean it off. It also includes the fact that you are taking those creatures on the bottom of that boat to another location entirely where they might not necessarily natively belong. And you are literally changing the environment just by taking that with you. Is that correct?
Yeah, right. Basically, you know, a boat with growth on the bottom of it and any surface that goes in the sea will get colonized by the nature because that's the nature of things, the way it works. Potentially, your boat could act as a taxi, taking these hitchhikers, if you like, from one place to another where they can, if they choose, they could jump off and start to, if they get a nice area that they think they could settle in, start to recolonize in that area. And, you know, yachting and boating, everyone loves to sail to beautiful parts of the world where the ecosystems are quite delicate. And if that happens, you know, then you can end up with the organism that was transported from place A to place B, starting to breed, starting to get bigger and become invasive, is what they call invasive, and then disrupt the nature. And we don't want that. And it's really a simple fix, really. And that's just look after your hull and make sure it's clean.
So as a whole, on a bigger picture then, if this is to continue straight across the oceans and the seas, what does that lead to? Like, is that something, you know, for example, we have seagrass, the Posidonia seagrass, you know, sort of different biosystems within the ocean in different areas. Does this mean that that can sort of take the entire balance and turn it on its head and the ocean will not work the way it's supposed to?
Well, it can cause significant disruption. I mean, it can, for example, the zebra mussel that was transported from Russia over to the Great Lakes caused all sorts of problems in the Great Lakes. There's in the UK now, we've got the Australian trumpet tube worm, which is starting to grow, which actually, you know, it grows much more intensely than the natural tube worms that in the UK waters. So it starts to disrupt things. So, it changes the natural balance. And once the natural balance is changed, then other things can start to happen. Also, for example, you know, if you start to transport things from A to B, it can take disease with it. So also some of those organisms, those little critters can be carrying disease. And they can start to take disease from you know, shellfish out to, across to another place, and that can then start to cause problems with the shellfish population. So it's not just about delicate balance of ecosystem, it's also economic in terms of the damage that it can cause to shellfish industry too.
Now, when we start talking about anti-fouling, though, that's basically cleaning the hull of your boat. But traditionally, that has consisted of chemicals and all sorts of, you know, different paints, et cetera, in order to make sure that this sort of thing doesn't happen. How are we going about it in the future to make sure that we have the proper anti-fouling in, you know, in service, as it were, without harming the environment with chemicals, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, what we've got at the moment is, you know, the anti-fouling paints that you buy are probably one of the most regulated type of products you could find on the market. So that means that nothing in the United States is sold unless the US and EPA have approved it and saying it's okay. Nothing in Europe is approved or allowed for sale unless the EU authorities have said it's okay. And the same in the UK. So, you know, anti-fouling paints over the past 10, 15 years have become more and more and more scrutinized because of what happened in the distant past with some substances. So, you know, I think you've probably, and I don't think, I know you've got one of the most scrutinized type of products. And when I say scrutinized, it means they've looked at them carefully and said, yeah, okay, the environmental impact of that small amount of chemical that's coming out of those things, which is primarily copper, to be quite honest, which is everywhere anyway, is acceptable and not going to cause unnecessary damage. And if you think about balancing that versus the threat to from invasive species, it's really overall is a benefit. Now, there are regulations that are getting more and stricter and stricter. And so I think the concern now is that some parts of the regulation community are thinking, we don't want any biocides at all in the environment, so we don't need any anti-fouling paints. But at the same time, they're not thinking that by doing that, they may result in a mass translocation of invasive species from place A to place B. So it's like what we need is a holistic approach to it, where everything is put in the, you know, the same pot and considered together. And that's really why we're having this conversation. We're having conversations in Southampton Boat Show, Genoa, Barcelona, Metz, Stockholm and Dusseldorf, where we want to have a big conversation about this and get some regulators in the room too to start thinking holistically together, rather than just thinking about it's the small amount of copper coming out of paint, or, you know, or just think about invasive species. We've got to think about everything together. We have to think about the solutions, the anti-fouling paint solutions that are around there, out there, the other non-anti-fouling paint solutions. How good are they? What's good on what boat? You know, because from what I can see, there's not one solution for everything. There's not one product which would go for all boats. All boats have different operating profiles, different types of boats. So to actually handle this problem, we need to have a full toolbox of different tools to be able to use to protect from translocation of invasive species. And that's really what we're talking about.
Well, with scientific discoveries, you know, sort of leaps and bounds compared to 10, 15 years ago, is there nothing in the near future that we're seeing possibly coming out that isn't harmful to the environment, that is something that can be utilized straight across the board for anti-fouling? Is there anything sort of on the horizon coming out like that you've seen?
Well, certainly there, you know, all the companies, and it's not just the paint companies, it's other companies too, are working on this flat out to try and find a solution. But as I was saying before, there are some solutions that are great for one particular boat or not, and not good for another. So there's ultrasound, for example, there's, you know, the ultrasonics is available. Yeah. But my understanding is to get that to work for a boat, you really need to use that in conjunction with paint anyway. So it's not like a one shot does everything. There's also some more futuristic things being looked at. So, for example, from a surface coating perspective, they're looking at trying to simulate shark skin in surfaces that go on the boats, which obviously shark skins don't foul. Also, there's been some very interesting work on LED lights. So, for example, there's Philips, which is one of the biggest manufacturers of LEDs, is producing small mini lights which transmit. You can actually embed in tiles and then put the tiles on the bottom of the boat. Then the boat, then the lights will actually provide UV radiation, which will prevent fouling. But that's futuristic, and it's all under research. So there's a huge amount of work going on. I mean, there are conferences all over the world about fouling, biofouling, and the futuristic stuff. So I think ultimately, yeah, we want to get to a situation where there's no biocides leaching into the environment, but short term, medium term, we need to actually, we're sort of stuck with those as long as they are environmentally acceptable, as verified by US EPA, as verified by the UK and European authorities. Long term, yes, of course, everyone's looking for that non-biocidal solution, which will totally change things. But I still think even when those sorts of technologies come out, you'll probably to protect all the fleet, all the pleasure boat fleet around the world, you're going to have a range of technologies, including some of these environmentally acceptable biocidal systems.
Well, and I mean, even for those people, because you know what? Let's be honest, there are those people out there that really don't care about the environment. They don't care what they're doing to the environment, but there is a financial benefit to making sure that your boat is taken care of in this way, because it does affect, you know, your fuel consumption. There's so many other things that it affects on the boat when you're not properly taking care of it.
Yeah, I mean, also, I mean, you know, when you start getting barnacles on the bottom of your boat, they start to dig in to the paint that's there. You know, they start to dig through the primers, and then the water gets through. If it's a aluminium substrate, starts to cause corrosion, or starts to cause osmosis into your GRP. So yeah, there are many, many, you know, a good boater really and should look very carefully at preventing fouling from an economical as well as an environmental perspective. And I do actually think that people are more concerned about environmental things these days. With most people now understand and have heard of global warming and climate change. I think the idea of being, you know, biodiversity and being nature positive is a new initiative came out of the EU, I think, in June after the COP conference. So that's going to, I think, take over. So we're going to look not just at the climate side, but also at the biodiversity side too, which is the right way of doing it.
Well, and let me ask you, there's also, you know, some discussion in the fact that design of marinas and harbors could play a role.
Sure. I mean, if we have marinas and harbors designed so that the water exchange and the water flow is to a point where there's no risk of anything building up. So if we have multiple numbers of boats moored in a marina, then there, you know, there will be some biocide there, which if there's not adequate change in water, or if there's not adequate space between the boats, that there could be some minor buildup. So we need, by designing marinas so there's enough water exchange, then you can actually make sure that that sort of thing doesn't go on. So yeah, everyone in the industry, all stakeholders have a stake in this to make the industry environmentally sound.
Yeah, because I could imagine in a marina, for example, when we're talking smaller pleasure craft, the off season, those boats just sit there. And when a boat is just sitting there for an extended period of time, 6 months, 5 months, 6 months, 7 months, in Canada, for example, it could be 8 months. It takes a lot of, you know, it's just sitting there. So the possibility that a lot of growth on the bottom of that boat, because it isn't moving. So there is a need to take a look at that, I'm sure.
Yeah, Sean, it's important to keep the, you know, in static condition when everything's sitting there doing nothing. That's when the critters love to go and colonize. So yeah, you're absolutely right. That's where you really need to take care that you've got the right protection on the boat to prevent that growing. Because if you don't then look at it before you go, then all of a sudden you're in a taxi again for these invasive species.
Well, you've got some conferences coming up. You are going to be talking about this issue a lot. Where can people go to find out more information on this topic?
Well, we're going to be talking about it, but we're starting a conversation about it. So we would really like to encourage stakeholders, people who are interested to participate in the discussion. So we'd like to get regulators involved. We're having discussions at Southampton Boat Show starting on Sunday. The Genoa Boat Show, Barcelona, Metz as well. We're going to have a session on it there, on the Hippodes of Sustainability session. Stockholm and Dusseldorf, where we want to encourage people to talk about this and start to exchange views and hear about the technologies that are available and what's happening in the paint industry, what's happening with ultrasonics. So yeah, so we would definitely encourage people to participate in that. We'd like to get regulators along to these discussions too. In fact, in Southampton, we've got two guys who are working with the IMO on the issue, International Maritime Organization, which is the UN of the Seas. They're very concerned about the whole biofouling and invasive species issue. So, yeah, the more people that can get involved, the better. And then I think we can all move together. You know, the technologies can advance, hopefully, and also the regulators can regulate in a way which isn't going to cause a bigger problem than we already do.
Well, you know, it's interesting because things like this people don't normally talk about. You know, other things that you are able to see with your naked eye, you know, you see gas spills or oil spills, or you see the results of boats in the harbor floating on the top of, you know, plastics, et cetera. This is something that people don't think about because it is under the water and not a lot of people are looking under there. And the average eye would never know it's an issue and would never understand that it's an issue whatsoever. And in fact, it is quite,
that's right,
quite an important one.
You only start to see it when the zebra mussels are clogging up everything, or all of a sudden you don't see a species anymore and you just see an Australian species in Europe instead. Yeah. So by the time you see it,
it's late. Yeah. Well, Julian, I have to say thank you ever so much for your time. I know you're a busy man. We're going to make sure to include as many of the links as we possibly can, not only from ICOMIA, but as well, we'll provide the link for Dr. Julian Hunter LinkedIn, if that's okay with you, if people have questions.
Go ahead. Yeah, sure.
Wonderful. And make sure to follow them and lend your voice to this very important topic. And if you have something to add, it'd be great for you to jump on board and add whatever you can. And let's see what we can do to make a change.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Ray. Great to talk to you.
Thank you. Once again, you've been listening to Dr. Julian Hunter as of October. He is the head of sustainability at ICOMIA. We thank you for your time. My name is Rhea. I have been your host. We'll see you again next time.